thank you for joining us on another Joy of Union and Out There combination with TJ and Joy Melchizedek. We are going to talk about a book that Joy's been writing and channeling with Morgan Le Fay. It's called The Light from the Cauldron. I am Morgan Le Fay. And if you're not familiar with Morgan, we'll get into all of that. But Joy is joining me now. How is my sister doing today?
I'm really good, TJ. I'm happy to be here with you and everyone. And I'm excited to share about Morgan and her story and a little about the book that has been 60 years in the making. So this is kind of like a branch of my life I had well hidden that popped up. So it only makes sense to share it with you.
So first of all, before we go any further, would you mind, we know Morgan Le Fay through the King Arthur stories. Would you mind telling us a little bit about Morgan Le Fay, and especially from what you know of her too, if you don't mind?
No, I'd be happy to. So I believe most people heard of the Arthurian legend, like King Arthur and Camelot and Guinevere, and what they called the wicked sorceress half-sister of King Arthur, Morgan Le Fay. Well, there's a couple of things they've stated, that this story of Camelot was a myth, and that it wasn't real. And as I said, they said that Morgan was, she was wicked. But what has been happening over the years, I think I was about 8 when she came to me in a visit, and I didn't know who she was. But a little at a time over the years, with a taste here and there, I started to discover that she wasn't wicked. And I also heard stories how in England there is land and spaces that are known to have been Camelot. So they're actually discovering more and more that the myth of Camelot was actually real. And that the story of Morgan, which very often happened over the past couple of thousand years, she was vilified. And this has happened with different aspects of the feminine and the goddess. So, and she's in that neighborhood. So, what she's doing now is revealing who she really is. And it's an interesting story about her. So, and I think she stretches people. So she shines a light in specifically in things that have been judged, like things people make assumptions about. So in this book, she reveals herself as she is, as a light, and she takes the veil of vilification off.
That's really neat because, you know, I think if you look back at any of our history, and even just talk to people, like recently I talked to this guy, he told me this amazing story about his father, his great-grandfather, who lived and survived through World War I. And he was in some of the most intense fighting, you know, with the foxholes. Mm-hmm. And he just, he avoided the mustard gas because he knew it would take a while before it would sink to the bottom of the foxhole. So he would lay down and put on his mask. And then they tell him to jump to another foxhole. And of course, if you jump out right away, they shoot you. So he always waited. He survived all that to the very end. And so I just, but you don't hear about those things. They make it seem like it's one way or another. And so when you started telling me about Morgan, and then you wrote this book, and I started reading it, you know, it, how often throughout our history, especially maybe with the feminine end of it, has that been turned around to where there are certain things they don't want us to know because we become a patriarchal society. And not that that is a horribly bad thing, but if it's not balanced. And so what we're seeing with this, would you say, Joy, with the return of Morgan and others, the return of this divine feminine energy is easing it. Is that kind of her message with all of this?
Yes, it's that. And it's also, so in the book, for example, it's the return of the feminine, but she also takes the things that people look at and judge, like even the title, The Light from the Cauldron. I've never used that word cauldron hardly ever in my life. I'm a metaphysical minister, but when this title came, she was revealing that this word that has been judged and put in a category was really a feminine word to describe the womb of creation that was vilified and like made to look evil and bad so people would fear it. And yet without the womb of creation, the divine feminine, creation doesn't exist. It's like we've heard how God is created in the image and likeness, or people are created in the image and likeness of God. Well, there's women here, and women give birth from the womb. So there has to be a feminine aspect of creation that gives birth. And that's what the cauldron is. And that's like an example of one of those things she's revealing. She's bringing the divine feminine up. She's speaking in here too about the people, like how the fae and tree spirits went underground and how there's civilizations in the middle of the earth. She doesn't get fully into that. That's the next book. She wants another book, but she's starting to introduce these worlds that have been hidden. So she's coming out in the divine feminine, and she's bringing lost and hidden aspects of different worlds with her.
That is pretty cool.
Isn't it? And the other thing, too, she's addressing how myths hold magic. And people think of the word magic, and very often they think of magicians and, you know, evil sorcerers and whatever. And she's like, no, it's in the neighborhood with miracles. So she's actually addressing how certain things are so connected, but the words and the training that people have had, they have learned to separate from aspects of things that really are inclusive in the oneness and need to be revealed and seen through the eyes of light.
And so we have this story, which when I'm reading through the book, they're just like, you woke up at a certain time, it looks like, and then you channeled a piece, and you wrote like a page and a half, then maybe a day or two later, you channeled some more, and you wrote that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is not like one big, you know, book going from different different stories to the next. It's a bunch of short stories that kind of some of you know, back each other up and continue on. And then some are just, it's just whatever came to you, right? You were rewriting whatever was given to you.
Well, yeah, whatever she wanted to say. And it's very interesting. And while I was writing this book, I found I would write, I'd say, probably 75 more, even more, 85% of the time, late at night, like the time slots where when people were in bed sleeping. And I had no idea why I was writing times and dates down. I just knew they had to be there. And I didn't question, and except for I'd be writing things in the book, and all she'd say something, I'd be, come on, Morgan, really? And she's like, yes, yes. And I'm like, okay, you know. So anyway, it's funny you mentioned the times, though, because I was doing that with that. And then I have had people say to me, those are the in-between times. Those are the times when spirits will wake you. When I wrote this book, I hadn't gotten in bed yet. I was writing this book before I went to bed. So, you know, unlike somebody that thinks nothing of staying up till 4:30 in the morning, I run a different schedule. I sleep, yes, but I also run on very little sleep. It's funny, I don't have a thyroid. God only knows if I did what would be happening, you know. But so I think Morgan, it's kind of like there's a feeling when you're writing or channeling a book, and when the world is still, it's as if you're sitting in that great void energy with her. And so, you know, now that I'm sharing that with you, the realization is that energy that came through from her came through from there in the writing too. That's what I feel.
Why do you think that? I mean, I know the answer, but I'm going to ask the question anyway. But why do you think that Morgan came to you when you were 8 years old? What is the connection that you have?
Well, so I feel that we all have divinity in us. And now I'm sharing my feeling, okay? And people may feel differently, that's fine. But I'm just going to say that because my perception is we all have divinity in us. And, you know, we have connection or ways we connect with spirit. And in those connections, we carry those energies, or some people say aspects of it. And I feel, excuse me, she came to me when I was 8, because up to that point in my life, there wasn't a childhood or anything really that introduced me to fairy tales or anything magical, not really. I only remember having one book read to me. And I would attempt to try to play, but it didn't have I didn't do it the way other children did. I think I saw the world differently because partially I was talking to spirits and everything. So that was always a natural part of my life. So, and when she came, I feel she came to me at that time because she wanted me to remember the lost aspects of magic and the fairies and the connection with nature. And so I write a little story about her coming to me and how shortly after she came to me, I was compelled to write a play. And I wrote this play about tree spirits and fairies and everything having to go underground because the world was being destroyed. And at 8 years old, I was making costumes out of paper bags. We didn't have any money that I could do that. And I remember doing it in a neighbor's garage, and I did the producing, the writing, directing. I gathered all the kids. I starred in it, and I did my role in song. She wanted me to have it. So when you asked me why she came to me, she wanted me to have this story. And I think she really encouraged me to express it. so I wouldn't forget, because shortly after that, I was, I came very close to being abducted. And what happened with that abduction, being an empath, for months after that, I dreamt what that man would have done to me. So I was terrified of connecting with the earth and nature for 25 years. I wouldn't go in a forest. I wouldn't do any of that. I like totally disconnected from the earth because of my fear. And she knew that would happen. So I was 33 when I started reconnecting with the earth. And then in the book, I tell the story how I met different people and, you know, was reminded of the fairies. And then a little at a time, I started to ground and get that it was safe to be on the earth. And it took a while, you know, because it was a lot to come back from. But what she did is, a little at a time over those years, like through my childhood and then when I started reconnecting with the earth, she would like peek her head in here or there. I remember the movie The Mists of Avalon was brought to me, and I was spellbound. And that was it actually was a movie that was created to introduce her as, you know, a high priestess. So that movie, it really connected with me. And then she kept coming in, and then I met Rosalind. And as I would look at Rosalind and see the third Mary, she'd look at me, and she encouraged me to pursue this connection with Morgan, because by then, working as a channel and doing the work I do, she came through, but I would push it off to the side. And I realized when she came in, she didn't want me to forget, and that this is a part that I am to bring in. You know, it's interesting, because the idea that someone is not a myth and someone is not wicked, it is really putting a whole different story out there than what people commonly think. And I really feel she started then, because she knew it would take a long time for the story to come out and for people to be ready to hear it at all. So you asked why she came. I think it was a combination of me not forgetting through all the hardships and actually being willing to step forward and get out of my own way so she could come through and share her story.
So going back to Camelot, we're saying that all this was real. There was a real Camelot. There was a King Arthur. There was a Lancelot. There was a Genevieve. There were the Knights of the Round Table. There was Merlin the Magician.
Yes.
There was Morgan.
All of it.
All of that. You know, and there, you know, I saw something on British TV maybe last year, and there were people that were very excited because you just felt like they knew. And they said, "We believe we know where King Arthur lived." And I don't know if it was in Scotland or somewhere over in that direction, but they felt there was some evidence that he could have lived there. And other people are going, "No, no, that's all a myth. It never happened, blah, blah, blah." And so you wonder, well, where do those things come from? Where does that all start from? And was there a time when things were like Camelot? That was supposed to be a very kind of a magical, special place, wasn't it?
But yeah, and the thing was, if my memory serves me correct, because you know how you get memories of other lives and that kind of thing, it was a bustling city initially that was created from pure intent, from heart. And it was an attempt to be a civilization that was focused on unity and peace. And it was during those times when Camelot was alive, it presented something different than warring over power, you know? And so it became a vision that people lived. And it's interesting, in Morgan's book, she addresses how the beauty of the vision was so strong, the idea of the vision of Camelot dying with its destruction was too painful for people. So its myth stayed alive in the heart. And I, in my spare time, actually, I laugh when I say that, I run a tour company. And this year, we're actually doing a Morgan Le Fay tour over to Europe. And we're going to the places where Camelot and Avalon are known to be. And there are portals there. It's like there are doors that were closed. So it's like a time of opening doors and that kind of thing. I just taught a moon class last night, and there's a fairy. His name is Helsiki. And what he does is he focuses on opening doors. And he's talking about breaking through doors of fear during this time. So anyway, this tour is focused on breaking through these doors, you know, to bring the myth to the surface. And yeah, we're excited. We're going over there. We're doing magic things and everything. And Morgan's excited. I hear her say she's going home. But this time right now, I've heard it said through Morgan and the Magdalene that this is the time of magic and miracles. And I have this hit because it's not just Morgan and Magdalene. It's in the heart of the Great Mother that this is the time of magic and miracles. And it's very easy to forget that when you look at the third dimension and what is destroying itself. But here's the thing. There's this end. There's a goddess. Her name is Kali, and she is destroyer and creatrix. I was just talking about her yesterday with a friend. In the town I live in, there was a flood here, and I remember it because it was on my birthday. And the flood was so bad, they had to shut the whole town down. The town smelled like gasoline. There was only one grocery store open, and that was because they had a backup generator. And somehow I went, and I dreamt this like 20 years ago, but I remember in my dream, I was staying in a house and I was taking care of these kids. And somehow I wound up with four or five indigo kids. Their parents were nowhere around, and I was taking care of them in this abandoned house. We didn't have food. I actually had somebody calling me to make sure things were still alive. You know, we did have phone reception. But during this time, the goddess Kali spoke to me. And she said to me, while I was trying to walk out of a flood zone, this is why you have come. And like when I looked at that, I was like, what do you mean? Everything's destroying. But then I was actually nurturing this new earth energy through these kids. So the town survived, you know, we got through it and they put everything back on. But it gave me a taste of living in two worlds simultaneously and making a conscious choice as to how to deal with earth shifts. You know, it was huge. And in the middle of that, there were miracles that happened. I saw these kids come together and want to show me things that they were observing. And these kids had been troubled kids. So I saw reactions from them that held hope. You know, now these kids are grown up. but now, again, we're going through earth changes and things are shifting and different aspects of the world are diminishing. And right in the middle of it, this is the time of miracles and magic because, as Kali says, when things destroy, there's also a polarity point of creation. And what you focus on grows. So I really feel Morgan is saying, put your focus, your light on the miracles and magic. That is what's coming out of this divine essence, the divine womb or cauldron, you know. I know I answered that question through three neighborhoods, but it had threads.
That's okay. There's nothing wrong with a long, detailed answer to a question. And instead of just like, you know, like a one word, I hate it when I'm doing an interview with someone and they give me a one word answer. And then you're going, okay.
Oh, well, me too.
Now what do I got to ask them to keep this?
I remember we did that one time.
To keep
we
this,
had that happen.
You know, how do I keep this going here? And and I like asking questions, especially if I know something about the subject. Is there anything in the book that you want to, is there a segment that you want to read, or is there something you want to mention within it that you feel, just whatever is hitting you right now, is there something you want to express?
Maybe I could share like a little passage. I think I went through myself. It's interesting. I have not sat down and read this cover to cover because it is written in segments, you know? So it's like each paragraph is its own story. There's a lot of themes. And I actually had somebody contact me and tell me how this one segment really hit them. So if it's okay with you, bro, I'm going to read this one.
Go ahead.
Okay. So it's called Morgan Heals the Pain of Separation and Its Shame. June 5th, 2022, 6:15 p.m. to 6:35 p.m. I want to tell you that the juice of fruit eaten when ripe was my favorite gift from Gaia. Her gifts were plentiful in many forms, and my likings always led to the sensual nature of life, the kiss of the wind upon one's cheek, raindrops on a hot summer's day, the smell of wisteria. All sweet, but sweeter still, was my love of the sweetness of blossom fruit seed to nourish the palate. I suppose therein lies a reasoning for a quick judgment from those who knew little of me. Sensual delights were perceived as cardinal delights, where I knew them as gifts from the mother of all of creation. The heavy judgment of the new Christian faith called for penance, while my being celebrated in the sheer delight of knowing her gifts. How I long to embrace the world with my heart while gifting these treasures, but the timing was not, for waves of judgment lay a cloak of fear over the delights of union. All were given labels of judgments to ingest separation shame. Dancing in the rain was seen as madness. Picking wildflowers became a trespassing of one's property. Picking the fruit off a tree could cause imprisonment. New Christian laws extracted the freedom of expressing the sensual spiritual nature of the mother, chastising all, laying a heavy shame on one's soul. So it was, and so it grew, till at last the very heaviness became too much to bear. Under such burden, the cries for grace came. It was the mother who heard, responding to their pain, the women of no time or oneness have come forward, breaking these chains, so each soul is free at last. I too open my heart, gifting each one with the sweetness of the mother's blooming, without judgments of gluttony, but rather with a wish for one's palate's pure delights.
That's a nice chapter. I guess we want to call it a chapter. Is that a chapter? Would you call those?
I don't know.
Okay.
I just wrote it.
So, you know, it's a theme. It's a really...
Yeah, I would say it's a theme because she writes in themes. Yes.
She lays it out very clearly as to what was going on in that time. And you can realize, too, with the way history was, that there certainly was a time when religion, maybe not as much today, I suppose depending with which religion you belong to, but it was very controlling and it eliminated a lot of different people. So,
yes.
And if you didn't, you know, didn't play along, you might not be around. So,
yeah.
I could definitely see. And when do you think, I'm sorry, you were going to say something. I was just going to ask you, when do you think that this took place? When did Camelot? We talked about this before. What time period?
It's really funny. I have to tell you, and she addresses this in the book. I have this thing. See, since I was a little girl, I've had these experiences of looking in time portals that time didn't exist. So I don't get a sense of, there's two things I don't get a sense on. I do readings. I've been doing readings a while and everything, but names are not my thing and time frames. I only sense that, you know, I know it was after Christ because she actually speaks of Christ. I know that. And I have this feeling I don't get a number. I'm sorry, I can't answer that. That's the truth.
I think historians, you know, if they, you know, the ones that say it, this could be possibly a true story, they put it somewhere around 500 to 1,000 AD. So. Somewhere,
yeah, that makes sense.
And it would,
I'll go with that.
Some would say the Dark Ages, and you know, they truly were because of the fall of Rome. We went back into very disorganized civilization. So, somewhere in that time period, perhaps King Arthur and Camelot and Morgan Le Fay and the whole group of them. Something that I learned by reading this book is that Morgan says that King Arthur was her twin flame. I thought that was interesting.
I did too. And here's the thing. When it was coming out, I got very excited because I thought, oh my God, that makes sense because of the story of what happened. If anyone has the chance to see the Mists of Avalon, they actually reenacted the divine marriage without knowing who they each were. And, you know, that is something that twins would do. And, but the thing is, it wasn't mentioned. And it explains how they experienced love in so many different ways in their connection. I really enjoyed hearing how her
familiar or her power animal was an owl, and his was a hawk, and how they both worked at night, you know? Mm-hmm. It's interesting when I say I enjoy this, I feel like I can say I enjoy this because it's her story. It's not mine, you know. It's not me going, oh, look at me. It's I really enjoyed hearing the details of things she shared concerning their history, you know. And I get really excited that those things are uncovered now, you know.
Yeah, and, you know, even if I wouldn't consider myself an expert on the King Arthur legends or stories, I mean, I learned about it in school, but what I read of the detail that she gave on a lot of things, it was very interesting as far as, you know, the different things that were going on and her son turning against Arthur, the lady in the lake is mentioned with the sword and all these different things that were part of that... what you learned in history, or what you learned as far as what was thought to be myth, the legend of King Arthur. A lot of these things are brought into play, and it gives me a different perspective. And then what I also thought was interesting, which makes sense, is that Lancelot, his twin flame, was Genevieve. So that's why they're probably fooling around. Well, I don't know if they fooled around on the side, but I'm just saying... They wanted to. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. The only old Monty Python, you know. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so then it makes sense because, you know, they both cherished Arthur from what you knew that before, and what Morgan says, the same thing. They both did. And but they also had these incredible, powerful feelings for each other as well. So that just was interesting.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's something as we're talking, that I had this realization of. I didn't put it in the book, but when I was a little girl, one of the first visions I had was of the death of Kennedy. And my understanding of Kennedy was he was an aspect of Arthur. Remember all the talk about Camelot and everything? Remember?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I was in kindergarten when he died, and I had this vision of his death, of the coffin being pulled by horses with the American flag about a week and a half before he was shot. And I really feel I had that vision because of the connection to Camelot. Because I would walk around, I would go, why him, you know, of all things? And that always stayed with me. And then, you know, it's interesting. It's like, I feel like here's another piece of the validity of Arthur in place. How that came outside of time, and it was imprinted here to help align the piece of the story, even in our government.
Yeah, I mean,
so
since we talked...
People wouldn't forget.
I mean, we've talked about it before, and we've channeled Kennedy, and so we've gotten some answers to that as well, and it just seems to make sense that is a good possibility. That why would they be talking about Camelot? You know, you talk about things in the past that you're familiar with, so.
Yeah.
But getting back to Morgan.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, that just popped up.
No, that's interesting. What more would you like to share about the kind of being that Morgan is, or even was when she was in physical form?
Okay, so I'll tell you what I know. I in my knowing of her, even her form, she was regal. She, you know, she had presence, and she had like this long black hair and these emerald eyes. Her eyes were really deep emerald, and she had this rich laughter, and it was soulful. and she was very playful. And she, her connection with the fairies, she describes in the book how she took them underground. Now, if you notice, for thousands of years, there was all this talk about angels, but there was no talk about fairies until recently. And the reason for that was the fae were connected to the divine feminine. It was like this whole aspect of hidden magic that went underground. And she took the fairies underground and protected them and took care of them. And it's interesting because they have taken care of her, and those that work with them, you know, or acknowledge them, they, and her connection with them was very strong and is very strong. They call her Mother Fae. And they, that's something that I really enjoyed. And she describes how, you know, she wasn't big into cooking, but once in a while she would make this bread. So she has this down-to-earth kind of personification in this book. And she addresses how it was the help in the castle, like the cooks and the maids, who taught her humility. And she also describes her connection with Arthur and how they would time travel to each other when they were separated. They would go into time portals to keep their connection going when they were each in different trainings. And, you know, she was loyal and dedicated and steadfast. And it talks how one of the things that really moved me when she was speaking in her channelings was when the destruction of the temples, see, her piece before she went underground was like one of the last pieces of the fall of the divine temples, the feminine temples. So what happened, she would go to the, she says, she went to her Christian sisters and prayed with them for grace. And she went to her coven sisters and, you know, sent blessings into the earth. So she would, she walked beyond division. And yet she struggled with integrating it all. She talks about how she, her issues with the destruction of the goddess temples wasn't with the people who did it, because she understood there was this plan. Which she couldn't stand was the violence that occurred and the burnings with, and there was kind of like a lust of hatred that she describes, that she, that's where she was repelled, you know. It's, she's very magical, and yet she's down to earth and has a strong link to the earth. And she's all on board with the reemergence of the divine goddess and the plan and the sacred union of the god and the goddess. So I feel that she's truthful. And it's interesting. She's so truthful. I have to keep going back and editing and resubmitting my copies. So it's good. She's keeping me in line. Mm. But this book, it was, and it is, it's a journey to write and be with her. I find her to be filled with truth and just so present for what she's meant to do. Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to share about this, about this book?
Well, it's not about the book per se, but if people are interested in getting it, I guess I should put this out. It is being sold on Amazon, and it's under the name Joy Regina Melchizedek with Morgan Le Fay, The Light from the Cauldron. So it can be purchased. I'm really excited that the book has actually been placed in the library of this very conservative town that I have been living in for 20 years. It's under the local author section. It's funny, when I moved in town here, they peek out the Windows Point and call me the town witch. and they wouldn't talk to me. And now 20 years later, it's under the local author section, this book that has the word cauldron. So I'm figuring we're making headway, you know. And it actually was sold internationally, so it's getting out there. And I'm excited because the word, her wisdoms that have these aspects of magic and oneness woven together so beautifully are being spread. So she finally has a voice again, you know. And yeah, oh, I wanted to say that Rosalyn actually is going to come on sometime and do an interview with Morgan, like a channeling. So I thought I'd let people know that too. I know you're on board with that, mm-hmm. Right?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. And of course you can interview her too. After all, it is your show.
Thanks for that.
You're welcome.
You know, I'm fine with just sitting back and if Rosalind wants to handle it and maybe, you know, clipping in once in a while, but then whatever helps serve the purpose. But you know, sure. What I take away from the book is that this is timely. This is connected to us transitioning right now. This is remembering who we are. This is just part of the whole picture, isn't it?
Yeah. And I do want to say, I do feel that her way of speaking, as my sister has graphically said to me, you don't talk like that. I think her language is very poetic. I think she speaks beautifully. You know,
perhaps, you know, there was a time when, you know, if you think about not that long ago in our history, even back 100 years ago, people chose their words more carefully and our vocabulary was different. And if you go back before that, I mean, it's just kind of de-evolved in the last 100 years to where we have a lot more slang. And I'm sure there was some then, but people that were educated back in those times, they did speak quite eloquently, didn't they?
Yes, and she speaks that way. And the other thing, one of the editors, you know, I think there was a team, because this book is very unusual to edit because the language is quite different. But one of the editors pinpointed out that it was very poetic. And, you know, the fairies are very into poetry and music and artistic expressions. And her name is Morgan Le Fay, Morgan the Fairy. So she has Fay in her. And it would make sense that her channelings would come through in this kind of rhythmic poetry thing that she does. So, but yeah, and honestly speaking, I know I can speak part truck driver occasionally, but, you know, it's nice to have her come through and just be able to give a message so beautifully. So thank you for having us on. I feel her here, you know.
Tell her I said hello.
I hear her. Okay, so if it's... Okay, I'm going to tell you what she's saying, mm-hmm. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
She says, she's showing me this vision of you at the round table. And she says, my dear Lancelot's son, You know, she knows you. You're like a second cousin, okay, to her. But she sees you as a younger, like almost like a nephew kind of energy. And she's showing me how, oh, this is interesting. She's showing me how you would laugh together. You were the youngest, and she loved laughing with you. You had this mirth, this whole thing, and she would be able to go there with you. And I see her saying, I remember our connection, and I hear the word fondly, but she's touching her heart when she says that, like a deep heart fond connection. And she says, he'll investigate more, he'll remember more, he'll recall. And she says, because he is a part of the energy of the circle of oneness. He is a part of the table of peace. He is a part of Camelot returned. And that's what she said.
And way that, and while that may not completely ring true, I mean, I do feel a connection to those times. I always have, to the knights and those kind of things, and even the story of King Arthur. I am grateful for her expressing that. And if what I do remember someday, I'll give you a big old sloppy kiss, Morgan, right on the cheek. How's that?
Good God. So you don't feel what she said was true?
I don't know. I think it could be, certainly, but I don't know for sure. So I'm just being honest with that. I definitely
Good.
have been
Yeah.
drawn. I've definitely been drawn to that time period and knights and swords and things. I used to be so fascinated. I would watch every movie I could see on that and King Arthur
Exactly.
and so anything you're drawn to, perhaps there's a reason,
Yes.
right? There's a reason for that. I don't doubt her. I'm not doubting her.
Absolutely.
I just keep an
No,
open mind.
yeah, I get what you're saying. And as somebody who interviews, it's natural you're going to question things. But I think what she's drawing up from you is the connection that you've had through those experiences with the knights and the swords and Camelot. It was like things with me when I did the play, so I wouldn't forget,
And
you
I
know.
didn't mean it as a way to slight her. I will truly
No.
give her a spiritual kiss on the cheek when I recall all that I need to remember. So I'm joyful.
Don't doubt
I
it.
am grateful that she shared that, and I'm grateful that you shared your book. Thank you very much, Joy.
Oh, yes, thank you for having us both on. And I heard Morgan say, I welcome the day when you kiss my cheek.
Thank you
I
very
heard
much.
that very clear.
Thank you very
So
much.
thank you. Yeah, and thank you again for having us on. I really appreciate the opportunity to share this with you and everyone. It was a delight.